So this summer, I was talking to a kid around my age in New York City, knew nothing about ski racing, and he was fascinated with what I did on a daily basis. His biggest question was in regards to my sticks. And I was like, "What sticks? The ones in the ground? Those are called gates." He said, "No, the sticks you hold in your hands. What's the point of those?" And I tried my best to explain that poles help with balance, but to someone who's never skied before, the idea that strapping a long stick to each hand somehow makes skiing easier, that was surprisingly hard to explain. So I stuttered for a while and finally tried to figure something out. But it just reminded me, ski racing and skiing is not the whole world. And I like to remember that sometimes. Gives you a little perspective. Anyway, let's do this thing. And we are back. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and welcome to Arc City. Arc City is presented by Ski Racing Media, and this episode is sponsored by On Location. Also, a shout out to Sync Performance and the World Cup Dreams Foundation for supporting me this season. Today, we have Ryan Mooney, the ski technician for Paula Molson, who is a very fast American tech skier. She has a couple of World Cup podiums and a gold medal in the team event at the World Championships. Our other guest is Bart Malin, the technician for AJ Hurt, a young up-and-coming American tech skier who just snagged her first podium, and also Nina O'Brien, another fast World Cup tech skier who is currently returning from injury. Ask anyone in the ski world, Ryan and Bart are very good at what they do. They have a lot of knowledge and experience, and they're just fun to talk to. So, without further ado, Ryan Mooney, welcome to Arc City.
Thanks for having us.
And Bart, welcome to Arc City.
Thanks for having us.
Actually, what's your last name anyway?
Mullen.
Mullen, okay. Gotcha. Bart, let's start with you. And I want to talk about, like, get people to know you first. From Belgium, you are in the summers, you spend the summers being the piston chief for Snow Valley, which is the indoor Belgium area that's turned into like a training mecca for all the slalom skiers. So is that kind of what got you into ski racing, and then what got you into teching?
Ski racing, my dad and my uncle, they boat raced. Mm-hmm. So I kind of grew up skiing, and then I started racing as well.
And where'd you ski in Belgium growing up?
Dry slopes to start with.
And then plastic stuff?
Yes. Okay. Like brushes.
Yeah.
Upside down brushes.
Like the, yeah.
Yeah. It's horrible. But it was the only thing we could get. So.
Yeah.
And then my dad started the first commercial indoor slope in the world. So then I skied on indoor snow and obviously traveled a lot skiing. Quit skiing, coached for a couple of years, spent about a year and a half with Sam Mays, coaching him.
Oh, okay. Yep. I didn't know that, actually.
No. And then he got too expensive one-on-one, so he went to Global, which left me without a job, and then Magnus Andersson called me.
And now?
As originally to be an assistant slash technician.
Okay.
But that changed to technician pretty fast. And
so you were coaching Sam Mays?
I was coaching, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
were you also his serviceman?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
And his driver.
Everything.
And his strength and conditioning. No, that last one's a lie.
So the team gained a lot by getting you because you have this. Do you think it helps to have experience coaching while you're technically, like for AJ, you're the serviceman? Like, do you give AJ advice on skiing or do you leave it to Magnus?
No, yeah. Sometimes you see, I mean, most of it I leave to Magnus as he's a chief and.
Yeah.
He's an amazing coach, but sometimes you see things and you talk about it.
Yeah,
but I think the biggest advantage of being a tech, or for being a tech, is that I used to race myself. And same with Ryan, everything we change on a ski, we know how it would feel like and what it does.
Yep.
So that's a very big advantage, I think.
Okay. Cool. Well, we'll pick that up, but I want to get to Ryan. Introduce Ryan. Ryan, I went to high school with you.
I like you were maybe two grades above me, three grades above me.
Yeah.
What year did you graduate?
2014, I think. Okay. Or maybe 13.
Okay. And I remember you were an extremely fast skier. And you went to UVM with Paula, who you dated at UVM. Now you're married to Paula. She's also your athlete, which is fun. And actually, let's just ask about that right now. Like, what's it like? I'm sure you get this question constantly, but what's it like tuning for your wife? And like, is if she married you, does that mean that she married her, like, she can't ever have another technician?
Oof, I don't know.
You guys in this thing for life?
I think probably. Yeah. But the question did come up last spring. I will be honest. It came up last spring. So it was kind of interesting. It was, yeah, but she was pretty firm. She was like, nope. A brand approached her and was like, yeah, would you? Do you want Ryan to be your service guy? And she was like, yes, 100%. So,
okay.
Felt good. So that's, I think, cool. I'm in for life.
That's cool. You got a job.
Yeah, I got a job.
You got some job security.
That's good. Yeah.
Cool. And I guess to get to know you more, like, when did you kind of switch from like ski racing to being a technician, and like, where did that passion come from?
Yeah, I think it all came from GMVS, from Todd Carroll at GMVS.
Yeah, okay.
Because like, when I was there, I worked in the ski room, like the first couple of years I was there for like scholarship hours. So I would help out Todd, learn how to prep skis and grind and like do all that. So I think that's kind of where that stemmed from. And at that time, like when I was skiing, I could tell that it made a difference. And I enjoyed it. And then, yeah, I did two PG years and then on to UVM. And then I was like, I was pretty full on like racing the first 2 years. And then when Paula kind of started making her comeback my third year at UVM, then I kind of like, I dropped off. I stopped training. Just went to the races. Thought it would work. Didn't really work. Started tuning more.
Yeah, okay.
And then, I was kind of like, I think I'll go full tech mode with her, because that was the only, we had to do it that way, because, she didn't want to have some random person with a bunch of kids tuning for her, so.
Yeah, no, was, for sure.
Yeah, it kind of, it made sense. It was bittersweet for sure to, like, be done skiing, but felt like the right thing to do. Like, one could really succeed, or two mediocre, you know?
Yeah.
I could be living in Vermont. It'd be great, but now I'm here.
I
always wanted to be on the World Cup.
Yeah, there you go.
So, there you go.
Between the two of you, you guys are like, our best bet for the World Cup is Paula. Let's put all our eggs in that basket. And you just started tuning and getting better at tuning, and suddenly you were just the guy for her. Has she had another technician? Or?
Yeah, she had a few when she was on the ski team first. Like, she was on the ski team for 5 years first before going to UVM.
Uh-huh.
And she had two or three there. A couple and one like really good one. So that she always says that I'm just one step below him, below Mateo.
Okay.
She says that's the only other service guy she'd ever have, but.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Bart, maybe.
I've heard her say, if I ever have to pick someone else than Ryan, if for some reason Ryan could tune, I'll let you tune my skis.
There you go.
Oh, there you go.
She doesn't say that when
Wait, so, I'll ask you, Ryan, then Bart. Or Bart, you can just jump in whenever you feel like. You just grab the microphone from him, whatever, if Ryan's talking too much. But before we get into the tuning, I just want to talk about the team you guys are part of, because I had dinner with you guys last night, and it's a fun team. And it's, you guys have that momentum right now. Like, AJ just went from bib 38 to third for first podium, first top 10 even, first top 15 also. Like, yeah. A nuts race. She's obviously ripping. Paula has been throwing consistent top fives. She's even had runs where you think she's going to win. And obviously Michaela's not here. She's not really part of this squad, but she's part of this momentum. So like, what's it like? Can you describe in some detail, or if you have any stories, like, what's it like being tuning for that kind of momentum? And if it's different than tuning when everyone's like not skiing well, you know?
Yeah, I think you're excited to do it every day. It's like exciting to go to training and watch them ski fast. It's exciting to tune for the rain or the race, rather than, you know, you're like, you're down in the trenches. You're like, just tuning for tomorrow.
Yep.
going back to the hill. It's just exciting, I think, because we are definitely a family.
Yeah.
More so than a lot of other teams. So it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to agree. We're like one big family, away from the real family. So no, that helps. And obviously when the results are there, then it's fun. And when it's fun, it's easy. So we don't mind spending the extra hours. That's our job. And it's just fun.
Yes. Yeah.
It's easy.
For sure.
When the athletes ski well and whatever you do works, it's not the toughest job.
Yeah.
It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah.
It helps. Well,
and that actually brings you this. You mentioned family. So Bart, you have a girlfriend and a kid at home, and I'm sure they miss you and it's tough to be away from home.
Yeah. Well, obviously they miss me, but my daughter never knew different. So I'm away in winter and then I make up for it in summer because I'm home quite a bit in summer. And the same with the girlfriend. When she met me, I was away most of the winter. So, and I'm used to it as well. Mm-hmm. So I try to go home whenever I can, a couple days, but actually winter flies by. Like it's January now and we have less than 2 months and it's over.
Nice. Okay. Because I was interested in, because you run Snow Valley in the summer, is this kind of being a tech, is that kind of a choice you've made? Like you're like, oh, I could figure something out in the winter if I really, really needed to be home. But teching, like being a serviceman, is kind of this passion that you kind of have to chase.
Yeah, 100%. Because if I wanted to be home, I would be home and work at Snow Valley all year round. My dad's 74, so it's about time he retires. But he's very passionate about ski racing. And he loves me doing this. And for me, I've always wanted to be part of the World Cup. Not on the World Cup, because I raced a couple of World Cups, but never did second runs or whatever. And now I'm working with, for me, the best team in the world. So
yeah,
I'm living a dream.
Yeah, I understand that. And talking to people that I've met over my years, like in ski racing, I kind of realized that the being away from family is hard, but a lot of families understand that their father or husband or wife who's away, like they're part of something exciting and they just kind of have to be there. You know, it's just
absolutely. Yeah. My girlfriend knows that this is my passion.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And obviously, I mean, I make money with it. It's a job, but she knows it's my passion and it was my goal in life to mean something in ski racing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm, like I said, living the dream and she fully supports me doing that.
That's cool. Well, now that we've kind of talked about, I wanted to get to know you guys a little bit for the audience and establish, like, it's a cool thing what you're doing and you're passionate about it. But I want to get into the nitty-gritty details of tuning. And so for the people out there, the young kids, I grew up tuning thinking that you were supposed to, file like 10 times and then take 100 diamond stone and just go at it as hard as you could. Just push into the edge. And then once you were done with that, take the 200, push into the edge as hard as you could, 400, 600, 1500, and nothing else. And that was just going to make a really fine edge because you'd work through all the diamond stones. I didn't know what a hanger was. I didn't know why my skis felt horribly aggressive. I didn't know that you had to pull second edge. I didn't even know what second edge was. And so it would slowly get in the way of the edge. For anyone listening, please look up second edge, because if you don't know what it is, it's really important. But basically, it's a piece of metal next to the edge. And if you don't use the special tool to remove that, every time you tune, the edge gets below the second edge. Stop me, guys, if I'm saying anything wrong. And slowly your ski will start to turn from a 3 degree to a 2 degree. And so it's just getting duller and duller, even though you think you're still tuning it. So I had all this shit to work through, all of these mistakes. Ryan, are there any mistakes you see kids? Actually, before we do the mistakes, I just want to talk about tuning. Like, for someone out there, can you walk us through a basic, like, 5-step how to tune a ski? if they just have hand tools.
Yeah, I think you started with the first most important step. Check to make sure you got the second edge or the sidewall material like away from the edge. Like, because they always you got to pull it down below, a little bit, which is a special tool, and it's a fine skill to do. Usually the first couple times it goes tuck, 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 and you got a nice little wave track next to your edge, but you'll get better at it.
Yeah.
But pull that material away.
And you don't pull too hard, right?
No, let when the tool do the work.
The tool does the work. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll get the chatter marks.
Yeah, exactly. That was my best piece of advice I ever got. Let the tool do the work. Don't push down on it, especially not on a sharp tool. Just pull it towards you nice and gently. So you get the material away, and then, start with a file. File the edge down. Short pulls with the file is best.
Okay. Oh, really?
Misconception.
I always do long pulls.
I mean, you can vary the length for sure. But I mean, when I was a kid, for sure, I put it on in the tip and then pulled it all the way back to the tail and ran backwards. Got all the way to the back of ski and was like, oh, perfect. But the middle never got sharp because there was no pressure.
I feel like the longer your pull is, the more chance there is of filing getting between your file and your edge.
Okay.
And that
little piece creates a burr
so
along
a
your edge.
Short one, release, and then... Like
take the stuff off of it.
And again.
Yeah, so short files, definitely good. Or, maybe a foot long or something, short files.
Yeah.
And then, a stone is good. Definitely, I don't use too many stones. 600,
like
1,000 stones.
The most aggressive grit you would ever use is probably a 600.
600, yeah. And you even when that's new, it's aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
that's really
definitely
important.
The I had the black 100 diamond moonflex diamond stone forever as a kid. I always thought that was the best thing ever, but like you pushed as hard as I could.
I
still have one of those in my little set over there, but
you never use it.
No,
let's do
it. So file diamond stone. You can put the diamond stone on the file guide, clean it up a little bit if you want to, but then most important is definitely like along the base edge to get rid of that hanger. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know what that is, you pull the edge and you make it really sharp, but there's always, you leave like a little overhang. Yeah. If you put your nail flat on the base and then pull it up along the base to the edge there, you'll see it'll catch, and you want to get rid of that catching point. That's really the biggest thing. So take your, a stone, a fine one, 1,000 or 600 works, and just put it flat against the base. The easiest way when you're getting used to
just
it.
Getting
it flat kind of on the base and lightly just run it up the base, and that'll get rid of that overhang. And then as you get better, you can put it back on the side again too, and give it one more polish if you want to make it sharper. But
I think the biggest mistake is, or mistake, when an edge is sharp, it's sharp. I've seen dads or parents of kids tuning, and it's just by with every extra pull they do, it's dollars flying off the ski.
Yeah,
because they sharp is sharp.
You don't need to do too much extra.
No,
like if you've done the second edge and you do a couple of pulls with a clean good file.
Yeah, if the edge is nice and clean and the file is grabbing maximum, then it's a couple pulls and it's sharp.
Yeah,
clean it up with a diamond file and
you're good. I also think one big thing that's really important, you don't need the most expensive tools, but having a good fresh file is the most important. And they're not expensive. So when you get, don't just buy one file for the season, get 10 of them. Because when the file is sharp, it works so well. And as you probably know, a dull file is the most frustrating thing in the world. And you cut your hand. Everyone's got scars on their hand from that. Yeah. But, slip off.
Have you guys had any really bad cuts?
Not super bad. I mean, definitely bad enough that there's been Band-Aids for few weeks falling off every time you put your glove on.
And they probably should have been stitches or something.
Probably should have been, but not for a long time,
Nothing crazy.
I think I've had stitches 4 years ago. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a stupid mistake. Yeah. Right around here, actually.
Do you guys wear gloves when you tune?
I should have, because I was polishing sidewall on a ski that was sharp, and I wasn't wearing gloves, and I was a little bit tired, and I slid off and four stitches.
Damn.
Yeah, I think we both wear gloves just when prepping like new skis.
And you're just going aggressively on the sidewall
when you're moving along the sidewall or moving along the edge with something to sand it down. Mm-hmm. But actually tuning, no, because we both use a machine, so we're not too much pressure on the edge.
And also, like, I want to be able to feel the edge at any point.
Yeah, like exactly.
Feel it up a little.
So when you're tuning, gloves are off. And if you have
to glove off, glove on, glove, it's pain in the ass.
But to the kids out there just starting, your hand will probably slip with the file at some point. So the kids should definitely
wear gloves.
Wear gloves.
At least one.
Yeah.
And you can always, yeah.
And I don't care if your friends make fun of you. Just do it.
No. Yeah. Safety first.
Yeah. Safety first. So I'm curious about any, like, some stories you guys have had. Actually, Bart, I heard this one story about how Nina O'Brien, Nina's been crushing it lately. She's currently out because of injury, but she was this, I think it was World Champs. She had an awesome run. She was sitting in second place. And what happens is, for those who don't know, after a skier finishes, you click off your skis and they test them for various measurements, and like the stack height was off, right?
Yeah, she was excuse me, she was 0.02 too high.
So
the maximum is
0.02 of a millimeter.
Yes.
Oh my god,
minimal. She had an amazing run, skied right into second, and I get a phone call from the Rossi guy, the head of race department. And I thought it was to say how well she done. So I was like, this was awesome, wasn't it? He's like, you got to come down. We have a problem.
No way.
I'm like, oh my God. So I, like, Magnus texts me as well. She's like, she's too high. You got to come down. I'm like, what? Like, obviously it was, roller coaster of emotions. I zip up my backpack, which had a couple of cans of Red Bull in that I stole at hospitality. I took at hospitality. They're free to take.
I always do that, yeah.
As I zip up my bag, quite aggressively, because I was a little bit angry. So I zip up my bag, and my screwdriver punctured one of the cans. So I had a full can of Red Bull spraying straight in my face before I was keying down to try and resolve the problem we had. So, yeah, that was... That was amazing.
Gives you a little extra energy, huh?
Yeah. Like, people were like, are you crying? No, it's tears of Red Bull.
It's tears of Red Bull.
One song, it'll give you wings. and I get down there, and what it was, because we always check the skis. And maybe back in the days, it was a little more on the limit, meaning that I would go to like 49 low, but that only leaves you 0.7 of a centimeter. As a buffer of a millimeter.
And buffer, for the people who don't know, they're measuring basically the distance from the base of the ski to where you click into the binding. So
the highest point
that your
binding.
Boot is off the snow.
So it turned out that it was an older pair of bindings, and the tread on one of the screws popped up a little bit. So it was totally fine, but we had to screw it back in. Very strong. We needed to call in some Viking power.
Was it quite aggressive screwing in, from what I've heard?
Very aggressive. Yeah.
Because the screw was hard to budge, and you had to get that screw lower.
Yeah. It was, Magnus did it there. He used his Viking power.
And now a message from On Location. What are you doing next summer? How about an unforgettable trip to the Olympic Games Paris 2024? Let us plan your perfect trip to watch the world's best athletes from premium seats with exclusive access to hospitality lounges in the stadium, along with tailored accommodation, tours, and more. Visit hospitalitytravelpackages.paris2024.org for more info.
Have you had any other moments like that where it's not really your fault? Maybe it's just like the screw popped up, but are there any moments where if you feel like you've messed up or something like that?
Yeah, I have a tendency of spicing things up at World Champs. last year at World Champs, Nina skied her first run, and it looks like she didn't have grip in one turn, like all the way down. She finished in 29 after first run. I was like, hell did I do wrong? Like, so I go back to the ski room, touch up skis in between rounds, and as I unstrap the skis and I put them on my bench, there it looked like she hit a rock or a screw from a gate. The whole edge was gone. It was all burred.
Oh.
So yeah, that was
And was, but that was something that happened in the course.
It happened. It's not. Well, it's not because of me.
You didn't send her in.
No. It happened in the course. But obviously, it was like at the first 10 gates. So she was struggling the whole way down.
Oh, that's tough.
And then I think I took another pair. Took another pair. She was second and ended up ninth, I think. So that was. But it's always something small happening.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's a game of hundredths of a millimeter, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you, for example, look at Levy, where they snow farm, every year there's girls hitting rocks, like small little rocks. And
oh, because they make a bunch of snow and they just shove it onto the course.
Yeah, they keep it over summer, so there's always little frozen sand or whatever. Oh. And whenever you hit that, the edge is gone. And then,
interesting.
But that's not within our power. Like,
yeah.
I can assure you the skis are always perfect before they get out of the start.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a challenge too, because I've been at World Cup starts where there's like full of rocks everywhere because of the lack of snow.
Yeah. And it's crazy to me, like I've had a burr before, and the difference between having an edge that is completely perfect and an edge that on maybe an inch of the edge, it has like a some tiny burr.
Yeah, you feel
that
it.
Edge, you feel it every single turn.
Yeah,
you just feel it pushing away from you.
There's
yeah.
no grip. It can be this much and you feel it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's crazy.
Ryan, have you had any like experiences that like put your heart in your throat like that?
Oh, well, that's every day watching your wife push out of the start gate for sure. Yeah. Leon's was good for me. Ah, yes, that was good. This actually just happened recently. My most notable story before the first run in Lienz 2 weeks ago. I brought the race skis, brought a pair of skis for inspection, warm-up, and race skis all up at the same time in the morning. And I brought them up. I put the race skis on my backpack, and then I had Paula's jacket over the top of my backpack on the race skis. So it was really packed in together. And then we went down for inspection. I get like halfway down the course and there's two German technicians on the side that we're friends with yelling my name like, Ryan, 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 stop, stop, stop. I'm like, what? Like thinking they just want to joke about something. And he's like, yeah, a bit of an issue. Somebody took your race skis.
I was like, what?
No way. You got to be kidding me. I was like, they're kind of in my backpack underneath Paula's clothes. Yeah, but yeah, someone took your race skis and they might have used them for the warm-up. I was like, what? They have tape. There was four straps and tape around the straps. So I was like, they took the tape off and used them for the warm-up. He's like, I'm not sure, but just maybe. Be prepared.
No way.
Turns out they didn't use them for the warm-up, so that was good. But
someone took them.
My heart was really racing. Yeah, someone took them and brought them down. And then I didn't see them for a little while. And then someone brought them down to our strength and conditioning coach, and he brought them back around for me. They were untouched, but I was definitely nervous.
Wait, this is wild. whoever did it, like it's hard to go to the wrong backpack with the wrong coat with three skis that you probably know are not yours.
Totally. Yeah, because like it has letters on there and the skis were actually definitely different than what this girl was using.
Do they say Paula Moltzen on them?
They say PM and her initials definitely weren't PM, but you know, I guess mistakes happen. But it was,
Do you know who took them?
I actually don't know her name. It's a young girl on the German team. I don't think she's on the German team, but she was invited for that World Cup after a good race.
Well, we don't need to incriminate her here.
Incriminate her. I don't think it was her fault. I think it was more the physio that was with them's fault, because he was like, oh, I think those are your skis over there. And then he grabbed them and then he took them.
Okay. There's no foul play involved.
I don't think so, but it was very stressful.
Michaela wasn't worried Paula's going to beat her.
No, just kidding. I don't think the guy did it on purpose, but yeah, that was definitely the most angry I've been during course inspection, sliding down the course. Paula was very, I was trying to keep my cool, but then she realized, like,
that's
what's wrong?
Crazy.
Like, someone stole your skis. What?
Wow.
Yeah. And then, then the joke after that from one of the German technicians was that he was going to steal the skis before every first run, just so she really went hard first run.
Did she have a good run there?
Yeah, she was second after the first run.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's what she needs.
Yeah,
no.
Maybe. Could be good.
I hate when people do that.
Yeah,
when
that's
one thing happened, they're
seriously.
Like, we should do that every single race.
Yeah. I wore this one sock. I wore the socks on the opposite feet. I'm going to wear them every time like that.
I ate a pizza and drank a beer before every race. That was good. And now I gained 20 kilos.
Okay.
Everything for the sport.
So
no crazy moments for me, but that was about the craziest. But yeah, definitely plenty of times where you're like, ah, maybe it was me.
So, okay. Yeah.
You know, like too sharp, not sharp enough.
So I actually, speaking of that, do you have any superstitions? I mean, Bart said that eating a pizza and a beer before a race is your superstition.
I usually get a couple of beers before a race. Okay. Like I'm not getting drunk, but just to
get you in the flow of things.
Yeah. Get the edge off. So I'm not super nervous.
Yeah.
That's actually that's really
after,
important.
That's after tuning though. Yeah. Okay. After we're done tuning.
No beer before racing.
No.
Done,
no. Yeah. And then we have a couple like beers in the ski room just to like mellow down. And
yeah. You know, you mentioned though, like being not anxious in the start. And I think that's huge because as an athlete, you wouldn't believe, like, I mean, you guys would believe, but like how I can, like in inspection, when I'm talking to my coach, I'm like, he's so nervous for me. And I'm like, honestly, I'm not that nervous, but it's just weird when you can feel your coach, or if you're in the start gate and your technician, you can just tell your technician is nervous. That doesn't help.
No, it's the worst thing
yeah.
you could do.
Like you guys are the vibe people in the start.
I do get nervous, but I'm apparently very good in hiding it.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Sometimes I tell them afterwards, like, that was very nervous. I didn't notice.
Yeah. But that's all that matters, is you provide the calmness.
The last thing you want around
start.
When you're ready to start to have a couple nervous people around you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But that's something we do. Make sure it's always just us.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're pretty good about that.
Uh-huh.
Like with it, I appreciate the cheering from the other people that come in and out of our team, but it's the start should be the same every time. So
yeah,
just
I think
the
it should
athlete
be.
And the technician.
Hear that's
the
smart.
Exact
that you do
same
that.
Thing.
Yeah, that's smart.
Because I mean, even if someone's there with very good intentions cheering you on, you always know how it is. You hear it. And
yeah,
like,
you hear it. Oh, it's out of the ordinary.
They're
yeah.
not usually
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Do you guys ever, when you're clicking someone in, can you kind of just, or if they're warming up in the start, can you feel, oh, today is going to be a good day, or they're way too nervous, or they're distracted?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I feel like you can, maybe I have more of a unique relationship.
You're
with
married
my
to your athlete. But.
You're probably not just doing tonight.
Bad sleep. Oh, man. I feel like usually a bad sleep is better.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know, but that seems more of like a pattern.
Interesting.
But you can definitely, 100%, you can totally tell. And I feel like you can definitely, maybe harder to see how nervous somebody is. Because sometimes nerves are, like the right amount of nerves is good.
Yeah, exactly.
You're excited.
Yeah, I've had sleepless nights where it just feels like I'm a little bit on edge. But because I wake up like ready to go.
Sharp.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not sustainable for like a 4-day NORAM series, but for one race for sure.
Yeah, we're not racing the Tour de France.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
nothing to add there. Uh-huh. Some, or actually, maybe a little.
No, come on, Ad.
No, yeah. Like maybe sometimes when you sleep a little less or a little like not an amazing sleep,
mm-hmm.
like you say, you wake up and you're like, I don't know, on edge. Like
if you got really deep sleep for 9 hours, you could kind of, it takes you a while to get out of that.
Oh,
sometimes.
For me, then
yeah.
I'm personally, then I sleep for the rest of the day while I'm awake.
No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, the other things I wanted to get to were tuning myths. Like, I feel like there's so many. For example, people have told me you hot scraping is a good thing, where you wax the ski and you immediately scrape it. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's good if you want to clean your base.
Okay.
If
so it's
it
not
one,
bad for
no,
the ski.
No, you do it once.
Okay.
For me, the biggest myth is people that say you got to hot wax your skis like 10, 20 times before you get them on snow. Because uh-huh. after one time, the base is saturated. If you don't ski, it's just a waste of wax.
Maybe twice
with a very, very good brushing session in between, but that's about it.
Uh-huh.
There's people like getting new skis, wax scrape.
But when you scrape,
from the third, yeah,
right, you're not getting all of the wax out of the ski that skiing on it would.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're basically just waxing and scraping and nothing's changing.
It's a big waste of time and money.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good to know, because I was told wax the ski 5 times before you ski on it.
No, I wouldn't do that.
No.
I don't think Ryan would either.
No. But I remember a childhood coach of mine always said the same things. Like, you got to do first two coats with the yellow wax, the soft wax, so it goes in real deep, and then do two with the red wax, so it goes in, you know, a little bit goes in there, but it's still, you know, it's getting harder, and then do like five coats with CH6 blue wax. We get really hard. And like, yeah, now I'm at 9 coats of wax here before I get out on snow tomorrow. That seems a bit aggressive. And then you go out on snow ski the first time, they come back and they look like Casper the Ghost. They're white again.
Yeah.
Like, why did I do all that waxing? But it takes time.
No, I think maybe on speed skis, it's a little different, where you want to have like the warm wax to penetrate it deeper and then ski them and then harden the base up a little bit. And then at the end, you're probably going to have create a ski that's more for harder, colder snow and one for warmer with a different structure, but also the waxing.
Okay.
So I think in tech waxes, it helps, but it's very minimal.
Yeah,
like in slalom, I wouldn't. I'm 99% sure people have won World Cups on slalom ski with either liquid wax or training wax.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it matters almost nothing.
No, especially nowadays for slalom skis.
Unless you're at Proctor,
if you're like waxing slalom skis with an iron, the skis they bend. They're so thin, so it influences.
This is important to talk about.
You can cut that one.
Yeah. No, that's important to talk about, though, because I know, like, I a lot of skis, they start to get cupped. Like, the tip of the ski, the more and more you wax it, like, it gets a kind of dimple right in the tip.
Yeah.
So, you're basically saying you liquid wax as much as you can
until
they start to get kind of burnt, I guess?
Whenever we have a couple days that we don't ski slalom, we'll probably wax them, hot wax them. With a roller, not with an
iron. Not even an iron.
No, an iron is too warm, and it's yeah.
Wow. GS skis, you'll wax with an iron, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Oh, really?
No iron. No.
Just the roller.
No, maybe people are not going to love this when I say this, but I don't even own an iron.
Really?
Wow. I threw it away the last time I was at a Super G race. I was like, I don't want to be around Super
Straight
G
Straight in
anymore.
The trash.
Yep, in the trash. I dropped it first, so it wasn't really working
that
well anymore. No.
Wait, let's explore this, though, your hatred for speed. Because I'm interested in this because a lot of technicians like speed because they have a bigger impact on skiing, on the speed that people...
Yeah, no, true. No, I don't hate speed. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to be a tech around speed because I'm afraid athletes get hurt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's my only reason.
Yeah.
I would never tech for speed.
Yeah.
And I also prefer watching tech.
Yeah. Does it feel like people get hurt more often these days? Or has it always been this much?
I think it's always... I mean, people or skiers always got hurt. But nowadays... And then, again, in slalom or GS, you can crash 10 times without walking away without an injury.
Yeah.
In speed, if you crash, there's always a 50% chance
you're going to do a knee or a leg or something.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I was around Nina when she had her bad accident at Olympics. And right there, I told myself, I do never want to see this again.
Yeah.
I was in shock. I've been working with the girls for 6 years now. They're like my children away from home.
Yeah.
I care about them like I care about my daughter. And seeing something... happening, I could never see that again.
Yeah, that was gruesome.
Yeah.
Man, Ryan, you ever had a desire to tech for speed?
Not really.
Yeah,
I would say I'm more tech.
Yeah,
it's like speed is more. It's not as exciting, I don't think, on a day to day either, because like you go and train speed, you see like two turns and like that's it. You go to slalom training, it's like you get to watch everybody. Ski the whole entire course.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can relate more. I skied a little bit of speed when I was young, but not, I can relate more to slalom and GS too, which feels good. I also feel like, we have more influence on the tech skiing.
Yeah. I'm interested. And so because like in tech, a lot, like the edge.
I do think it's easy. It could be easier for sure. It'd be less skis, you know.
Like speed.
You don't break three pairs of Super G skis every week when you're.
And that's what you do with slalom skis?
I mean, a lot of the time, for sure. You go through streaks, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think they spend less time in the ski room than we do. but it's just different. It's more repetition. Same thing. Waxing.
Yeah.
Scraping.
A lot of brushing.
And we get like 30 to 35 new pairs a year to prep.
Oh, wow.
Where speed skis, you want to keep them as long as you can because they're fast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's. I think it's, for me, it seems boring. Also, like Ryan said, watching the same couple turns for like a couple runs, and then there's a lot of waiting too at the races. A
lot of waiting. That's why I don't like speed. I mean, I love the act of going fast, but everything it takes is just so much waiting.
Yeah, I like to go fast too. It's not because I don't want to be around speed that I don't like to go fast, but it's, yeah. And I can relate more to tech skiing too. Like, I did a couple downhills back in the days, but it was very afraid to.
Well, and you guys are focused more on the edge, and it's been wild to me to explore how much of a change in the feeling an edge can have just on tiny things. Like I used to tune and I would hit the edge with a finishing pass, the lightest touch with a ceramic stone. And I was like, why are my edges so aggressive? And I stopped doing that one thing because some technician said, yeah, you know, a light pass with the ceramic stone does a lot more than you realize.
Yeah.
And I stopped doing it. And that was the like one thing I needed to change my edge. And it's probably on a microscopic level that things are changing.
Yeah, that is true, especially with nowadays there's a lot of machines being used for tuning the edges. Ryan and I, we use machine. They're still hand tuning too, but I think it's all like, it's very personal. I think Ryan agrees if I can say that we kind of tune 80% the same, 85. But everyone has this personal little finish. And with the ceramic, I'm afraid of using a ceramic. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to fuck up a perfect ditch with one pass with a ceramic. So I never use it. But it's nowadays it's just in the fine tuning, the finishing. It's all about the finishing. And that's my opinion.
Yeah.
You can use whatever machine or hand tune. If the finishing is bad, you can have the $7,000 machine. It's not going to help you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people finish a little bit different, and that's why the very small differences are noticeable or made.
Yeah. And then as we talk about this same subject, Ryan, do you do different finishes for different types of snow? Like, that's a big thing I've been trying to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually just thinking the same thing. But yeah, it's definitely... I feel like that's something that I'm personally getting more comfortable with, is like knowing the night before, like, this is going to work. I know it's going to work.
And I'm not going to have to adjust. Because you know what the snow is going to be like.
Because I know what it's going to be like. But I think that's a big thing, you know, we talked about earlier from being a racer. Like, you can inspect the course and slide down the snow and be like, oof, man, like, it's going to be catchy today for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the ice is like injected and it's slick. I need like really sharp edge, or like maybe it's injected but you've got those like groomer tracks in between. Like, so the finish is, it's everything. Yeah. Okay. But I think that we're both getting better at that.
And gummying. I mean, gummy. For those who don't know what a gummy is, it's like it's basically like a almost squishy stone that you take to your edge to take down the.
Yeah, like a piece of rubber, pretty much.
It's a piece of rubber and it takes down the edge, and, you know, usually you'll do it on the tip and tail. And I think, like, I guess your standard tune probably involves a little bit of taking down with the gummy on the tip and tail.
Yeah, always, for sure. Like, where the ski sits flat on the snow, I think that part of the edge should be sharp. But, you know, up in the tip of the ski, curve where it comes off the snow, there's no reason to have that sharp, because, and same with the tail in the back when it rises up a little bit, you want that dull just in case if something happens, you crash or you get in a weird position, you don't want the tip or the tail to catch. You know, think about those classic like Bodie moves where he's like smacking the tip off the snow if that was sharp and, you know, catches. So definitely always take the tip and the tail off, and then you know, leave it sharp the night before when you tune. And then the next day when you get up there on the hill, you're like, oh, it's a little grabby. And then you can have that gummy stone and take a little off. Because I think even on the iciest of days, like, it helps to take a little bit off the tip sometimes so it doesn't grab as fast.
Yeah. Are there any divisions among the technicians of the World Cup of like, I do things this way, like the kind of like the iron versus the not iron. Are there any of those where there's just like two groups?
Yeah, I think maybe hand tune and machine.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think it's like, I consider myself, even though I'm close to being 42 years old, I consider myself a young tech. And I think it's more so that like old generation and newer generation, also with machine and hand tune, but like older generation, they would wax with an iron. They say a roller is lazy.
Mm-hmm.
But same with machine. Machine's lazy. No, it takes more time to machine a ski than hand file. But it's just the way you're used to doing things. And I think there's a couple of younger techs coming up, and new generation. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We're a little more open about things too. Like I don't have any secrets. Mm-hmm. Like the Norwegian tech can walk in here and ask me, what do you do? How do you tune? And it's no secret.
That's interesting because, you know, people like to compare, or people have been watching more F1 recently, and they like to compare it to ski racing and whatnot. And a big part of F1 is not giving away your secrets. So maybe like the ski manufacturers don't give away their secrets, but you guys as technicians, you don't have much to hide.
We hide 5%, I would say.
Okay.
I'll tell pretty much anything but the 5%.
Interesting. Ryan knows everything. So tell us the 5%. I'm just kidding.
Off the record, I will.
Yeah, it's 5%.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean,
maybe not even.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And I think it's also like, you can tell someone comes in, they're like, how do you finish the edge? Can you show me? Like, sure, I'll show you. But they're probably not going to be able to replicate it the same exact way you're doing it anyway. So why hold it back? Yeah. Why have them ask that question and say, no, get out. No, I'm not going to show you what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like, you're close to me.
For sure.
But it might not work for them.
Yeah.
You know, different brand, it's different tuning, different machine, different stones.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of the kind of the technician community, something I've noticed is you guys are probably two of the more normal ski technicians I've come across. Like it's an interesting job. You're constantly on the road. You're constantly packing up. You know, it's a very unique lifestyle. And I think there are some people that stick with it. And the people that stick with it sometimes are a little bit, they're just
curmudgeons.
They're curmudgeons. They're characters. And I guess I don't really have a question there.
I think Bart and I were actually talking about this the other day, and that's like another reason that makes our team unique is that we're so involved as like part of a family to the girls, to the coaches.
You're invested like emotionally.
Emotionally.
The community.
And with the community, and maybe not just that, not knocking on other techs, but just the way the style and the job has always been is that maybe the technicians are a little more separated from the team. You know, they tune the skis, they get a couple of days off, they go home, hang out with their family, which is fine. I totally respect that. But, you know, I'm on the road with Paula whenever she's traveling, and Bart's on the road. You know, you can't really drive home to Belgium for a weekend. So he's with us. And yeah, I don't know. I think we bring you good energy.
Yeah.
People notice that at the start sometimes.
Yeah.
I tend to get loud after a good run. I'm very, very, very bad in hiding my emotions.
Because you're watching that TV up at the start.
Oh, yeah.
See AJ have a good run. And then you're just fist pumping. Or
rumor has it he almost scared the next racer out of the start.
In Crunch K? Yep. Yeah. I dropped a couple F-bombs. Yeah, I think everyone at the start knew AJ had a good run.
Yeah.
No doubt. And maybe like halfway through the hill. So that was very loud. No, that's what Ryan was saying is like, we are very involved with our athletes. And then maybe I'm saying this again, repeating myself, like the older generation, it's more of a like a 9-to-5, not a 9-to-5.
Yeah,
but
you clock in and clock out.
Yeah, it's their job. Yeah. And if their athlete doesn't perform, they're like, fuck, maybe I'll miss my bonus at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Because you... bonus on prize money or whatever.
Yeah.
if AJ or Nina or even Paula, who's not my athlete, like doesn't ski well or was in a good position and blows it, I feel bad for them. Yeah. Like maybe I'm too emotional that way, but I'm like very, I want the best for all those girls.
Yeah. I'm sure they appreciate that too.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's the other way around too. They, mm-hmm. they don't see me as just their technician. Like I'm, yeah, part of the team family, I would say.
Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool. And along that same vein, I've kind of noticed at races and stuff, training, it feels like athletes talk to athletes, coaches talk to coaches, and techs talk to techs. And it sometimes, like, it's crazy the number of technicians and coaches that are on the NORAM circuit with me for 5 years that I never even know their names and don't even realize that they're there. Like, it's such a, don't you, I mean, I don't know if you guys experience this, but maybe it's different in the World Cup, but sometimes there's just like these hierarchy. Different, maybe a hierarchy, and maybe just like people like only talk to their like peers.
But I feel like most of the time technicians, or I'm talking for myself, we're the buffer between the athlete and the
coach.
And the coach.
Uh-huh.
Like the coach obviously does all the on-hill work and the video and whatever. But if they're not skiing well and you drive from one location to the other, you got to talk to the athlete for maybe 7-8 hours.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah, of course. You can talk about it better for 2 hours, but
yeah. But I mean, also boring. Like at races, like with other teams, does it feel like you talk to a lot of athletes on other teams, or are you mostly talking to technicians?
I would say mostly technicians and then coaches, but I think it's more open than it used to be. What do you think? More open than it used
to be. And I feel like we're a little bit maybe breaking that mold or trying to. I don't know.
Like it feels like you guys kind of do.
To say that, like, it shouldn't, the coaches aren't better or worse, but I think everybody can talk to each other. I think it also helps for us that we were racers and we're more involved with the team. So we also talk, like, we don't just talk about edges that night. We talk about how someone's skiing or technique or, and it interests me, interests Bart. So I think it's valuable to talk about that and to be able comfortable to go to any coach and talk about somebody's skiing.
Yeah, but it's also like technicians are always in the same position. We're at the start or we're watching from the same part, and then the coaches are somewhere else. So
yeah,
we usually always have something to complain about.
Yeah. The technicians complain. It's part of the job.
It's like, what's one of the biggest complaints?
I don't know. Today was a beautiful day. It was amazing training. It's kind of cold, huh? Awesome day. Yeah, kind of cold.
Wish the coaches parked far away and we could have parked right next to the hill. That would have been nice. Three less steps.
Just a topic of conversation, huh?
Park in a good spot.
We're like, I'm a champion of complaining about little things. But half of the time, I don't mean it. So.
Yeah. That's fine. Well, we're actually nearing the end of our time here.
Oh.
But
just
I
just getting
know.
Warmed up.
I know.
Yeah.
It feels, it starts to go, huh? Right when you get going. So, I guess, did you guys have any stories where you're like, wow, that's a great story, I want to tell it, or advice to people or anything like that?
You can start. I have a lot of stories. I need to think which ones are
we could do an extended episode.
Yeah. Might have to be a couple extra minutes on the end. I think the biggest advice for people tuning, for kids, ski racing dads, moms tuning, keep it simple. Keep it simple. It's very easy to go into the ski shop, and you know, there is some very knowledgeable people around in ski shops, but there's plenty of them that'll get you to buy 18 different waxes, the iron, all the stones, yada yada yada. Like, keep it simple. Get a file, get a couple stones, get liquid wax. It, unless you're on the World Cup or Europa Cup, really, you know, you don't really need to worry about it. So keep it simple for yourself, and fresh file, fresh stone, liquid wax, and you'll be golden. And tune your skis often. You'll be happy. Even for kids, like it does help.
And once you learn to do it correctly, it doesn't take that long.
No, it should not.
It could take like 25 minutes.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. 15, 20 minutes, you should be good to go.
Yeah.
Maybe we're on to story time now. But
What's your kind of go-to story when you look back on your years and years of being a World Cup technician? Like a crazy story or a really impressive result, or
I don't know. Probably our best interview ever together was after World Championships last year when we won the team parallel.
Yeah.
There's video of that. Magnus has it, I think. Yeah.
We got interviewed?
We did a live interview on Swedish TV at the top right after that happened, prior to me knowing about Paula shattering her hand. So I was on cloud nine for a few minutes there.
And you guys, your team won the World Championships gold medal.
Yeah.
That must have been amazing.
It was amazing.
Was it Paula and AJ racing?
Nina. Paula and Nina.
Yeah, so it was
Paula
both of your athletes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you guys won World Championships gold.
Yeah, Paula had to beat whoever she was, Taya maybe she was against. She had to beat Taya, and then Tommy, there was one more to go, and then we were like, whoa, did that really happen? Yeah, that was pretty fun.
And yeah.
That whole interview, I looked like a 10-year-old going to Disneyland for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that was good. That was good. I have to say, last Sunday was pretty amazing too.
You and AJ got there.
Into third. Wow.
The first podium.
Yeah.
There's no other feeling.
No. It's, yeah.
Uh-huh. And pretty those much, are kind of the moments you live for, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whenever they do well.
It's, yeah.
I get 10 times more satisfaction out of one of our athletes skiing well than I ever had of myself doing well.
That's cool.
I get more nervous too, but I'm good at hiding it.
There you go. Well, that will kind of wrap us up here. I always give a chance at the end to shout somebody out, or like, I don't know if you have sponsors you need to shout out or people or anything like that, but the floor is yours.
Shout out to Snow Valley Indoor Training Center.
There you go.
The best indoor in summer.
Book your training now.
Yeah, book it now. It's going to fill up quickly.
It always does.
We're accepting now.
Okay.
We have bookings already, so be fast.
There we go.
Also, I know a guy that can get you first lane.
There we go.
Oh, and if you want to train with Jimmy Krupka, you know the other guy to ask.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't know. Shout out to Todd Carroll for me.
Yeah.
Getting me into tuning.
Is he still working at Wintersteiger?
Still working at Wintersteiger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just got me some fresh rubber bands a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
Green rubber bands.
Okay,
my signature look.
One more shout out. I got a shout out to Magnus Andersson for hiring me six and a half years ago.
Yeah.
Because of him, I'm able to do this. And shout out to my dad, still running Snow Valley, 74 years old. So
here we go.
Yeah, that's all the shout outs. Shout out to AJ for killing it on Sunday. Yeah. Shout out to Ryan for putting up with my shit every day in the ski room. Shout out for my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to your daughter.
Yeah, shout out to my daughter, who's probably going to be the next Mikaela Shiffrin one day. She'll never ski.
Oh, really?
No. You know why? You know how you become a millionaire while ski racing?
Stop ski racing?
No, start up with a billion.
Got any more shout outs, Ryan?
I think that's all.
Okay.
I can't top that.
That wraps us up. Now it is time to nibble on a little nugget of skiing history, the 1984 Winter Olympics in Sarajevo. So I know that a lot of my listeners are not from the US, and I apologize that this nugget will be strictly about the American team, because it was their best showing ever in an Olympics. That year was their best showing ever in the Nations Cup standings, and it was the best Olympic showing until Vancouver 2010. And the reason I'm doing this is I don't want anyone to forget about the American legends that came before us. And ski racing history is so sparsely attended to. So I'm trying to do my part here to help people remember. The article that I have pulled up right now is on skiracing.com and was written by Rick Bichand. And as usual, I'll do a little paraphrasing and some direct reading. So for the kids out there, to set the scene here, the only way to watch the Olympics was on TV.
So you had to know when the broadcast was. There was no pause button. You were fully locked in. And Rick writes, I remember my excitement back then, sitting in my college dorm room with my roommate in front of our 12-inch portable black and white TV, watching ABC's broadcast of the games. Because of the time difference between the U.S. and Sarajevo, the only difficulty was avoiding learning the event's outcome before they were aired on primetime in the evening. Now, the Alpine ski races were held about an hour's drive from Sarajevo, and it was just downhill GS and slalom in those days. Combined and Super G were added at the next Olympics in 88. So to start off, the Olympics opened with the biggest winter storm in Europe in 50 years. It just kept snowing. But ultimately, they cleared all the tracks, and the weather improved, and the GS was first. The American women went 1, 2, and 4 in the GS. Deb Armstrong and Kristen Cooper grabbed gold and silver, respectively, and Tamara McKinney was in fourth. She won the second run. And if you're a longtime citizen of Arc City, you'll remember that I did an episode with Tamara. Really great episode. She was the first American woman to win the overall title and the only one aside from Lindsay and Michaela to ever do it. So she's very cool. And going 1, 2, and 4 in the Olympics is pretty awesome. Now, no American male had won an Olympic gold medal in alpine skiing up to this point. But of course, that changed at the 84 Olympics. The downhill course was, according to Doug Lewis, quote, not the toughest or most challenging course in the world, but had sections of big turns and fast speeds with a long gliding section. So first-time Olympian Bill Johnson won the thing and solidified himself in the upper echelons of American downhiller history. Now, the final alpine event of the games was on the last day of the games. It was the slalom for the men. Steve Mayer won the first run by a whopping 0.67 ahead of a Swedish man, Jonas Nielsen, and 0.7 seconds ahead of his brother, Phil. And he knew he had to send it second run. He knew that Olympic golds were not won by one good run and one bad run. Unfortunately, he made some mistakes in the beginning. His brother, Phil, had an awesome run, was sitting at the bottom in first place. Steve is coming down, makes some mistakes, but he pulls himself together, makes the time back up, comes down, grabs a silver medal. Phil and Steve go 1 and 2, another epic outing by the American team. Steve says, quote, had I not been going out 100%, I probably wouldn't have been as competitive as I was. I don't know. I mean, it's funny because you go there and you have a day when everything goes right, and you don't feel you did anything different, end quote. I 100% feel that, and I'm sure every ski racer out there knows the feeling of sometimes it's just your day, and it's all you can do is sit back and enjoy it. Now, all of the American ski racers talk about how the medal winners at the 84 Olympics were completely mobbed by reporters after the race. And you have to remember, those that lived the 80s and those that didn't, including me, this is just from my research, the 80s were a golden era for alpine skiing. The sport wasn't yet competing with slopestyle and halfpipe to be the coolest event on skis. Ski racing was the coolest event on skis. So that's just a fun thing to remember. Now, it wasn't always easy to watch ski racing on TV in the US during those times, just the regular World Cup. Not much has really changed today. So the Olympics were a big, big deal. The historic performance of the American skiers at the 84 Olympics was likely watched by a whole generation of young skiers who just sat there, you know, no pause button, glued to the TV, watching the games unfold. And lastly, for those out there who don't know, Sarajevo was in the former Yugoslavia, which was a country that consisted of Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Montenegro, Serbia, and Macedonia. And it split up a few years after the Olympics were held in a series of really bloody conflicts. Now, Deb Armstrong remembers, quote, Sarajevo rolled out the red carpet to the world in the opening ceremonies, Serbs, Muslims, and Croats all dancing in full color and arm in arm, end quote. Kristen Cooper reflected, quote, "I think if you look beneath the surface, tensions were bubbling, but the Olympics always brings out the best in society and in the communities that host the games. We saw the best of that multi-ethnic city. It was heartbreaking for all of us to see what happened later," end quote. So, sorry to end that story on a sadder note, but I do think it's important to mention all of the history around it. I hope all of you that lived it got to relive it, and those that don't know about American ski racing history learned a story and learned some names like Deb Armstrong, Kristen Cooper, Tamara McKinney, Bill Johnson, Phil and Steve Mayer, the young downhiller Doug Lewis, who would go on the next year to win a world championships medal. So with that, we are at the end of the episode. I've got two more interviews already recorded in the bank, so hopefully I can get them published relatively soon. Until next time, don't forget to subscribe or tell your friends to subscribe, carve some deep arcs, and be friendly to the strangers on the chairlift. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and thank you for visiting Arc City.